It's the 18th of February. This is Studio Energy. Europe's energy-intensive industries are struggling. The Antwerp Declaration, signed by industries almost a year ago, was a cry for help. A cry that will be answered next week when the European Commission presents the long-awaited Clean Industrial Deal. How bad is the situation? What should the deal include? And will it come in time? To answer these questions, I'm joined by the president of Dow Chemical in Western Europe. My guest in search of Europe's energy future is Tabita Verburg. Ms. Verburg, a very warm welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're in Terneuzen, the beautiful Dutch province of Zeeland. You're from Goes.
Goes.
Originally.
Born, yes.
Yes.
My mother is German. My father is from the Netherlands, born in Zeeland. Yes.
And you went all over the world. Well, Groningen. I read somewhere in your bio.
Oh, Groningen. Okay. Yeah, no, we have a plant in Groningen.
Oh, I thought you lived in Groningen for a while.
No. I lived in Ghent in Belgium, which is close here to the border. Mm-hmm. And we're border citizens, as we always say here. And I was, of course, spent a lot of time in my youth in Germany. But Groningen, we have a beautiful plant there, Delfzijl location.
Okay, so you return to the motherland.
To the motherlands, yes.
I've introduced you as the Dow president of Western Europe, but officially you are President Benelux, France, Nordic, Spain, UK, and the chair board of Dow Benelux. So Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg.
Correct.
That's
Thank
correct.
You.
Okay. A role you took on almost a year ago, succeeding Anton van Beek.
Yes, April 1st, it's 1 year.
Yes, and you joined the company in 2001. So I guess that makes you a Dow veteran.
Dow veteran?
Yes.
Is that the female word for it, veteran? Yeah.
No, veteran, somebody who has been with the company for a long time.
Yeah, I know, but I was kind of joking with you.
Ah, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't get jokes.
Yeah.
Well, for those who are not familiar with Dow, what kind of company is it?
Well, Dow is, as we say, a material science company. I think probably most of the people that know Dow from our industry base in plastics and chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
We're a global company.
Yes.
Our headquarters is in Midland, Michigan, and we exist 127 years. So we've seen a lot happening in the world and in the industry in that beautiful 127 years.
Yes, and Midland is quite a small town.
Midland is a beautiful town.
But small.
Small, yes.
I mean, it's not one of the big U.S. cities.
No, but it's
where
in,
the company originated.
Correct. Mr. H. Herbert H. Dow came from Midland, Michigan.
So true to the roots.
True to the roots,
okay.
Yes.
Like you said, Dow operates globally. How big is the European part of the business?
In Europe, we have the EMEI region, as we would say it. We have 11,000 employees. It is a significant part of Dow's sales, of course. We have 35 manufacturing facilities in 15 countries. So it's a huge part of Dow globally.
Yes, and the EMEI is Europe, Middle East, Africa, and India.
Yes, the I stands for India, correct.
Yes. So, but what's the percentage like, the percentage of the revenue?
Europe? Well, in average, if you would take it over the years and cycles, around 20%.
Of the region?
Of the...
And of the whole Dow global business? Or is that the 20%?
That's the 20%,
okay, yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about, Ms. Verburg, about all the difficulties facing Europe's energy-intensive industries. We can talk about difficulties, huh?
Absolutely.
But problems, or do you call it challenges?
Challenges, opportunities.
Opportunities, oh,
but
wow.
Also difficulties.
Yes.
Let's be honest and transparent, what's going on.
And I must say, in preparing this interview, one question came to mind as, mm-hmm. as I read up on Dow and on you as well. What do you spend more of your time on in the new job? Is it growing the European business of Dow or shrinking it?
At this moment, we're spending a lot of time of making kind of, more difficult decisions to eventually grow in this this area again. Yeah. But it's a lot of investment in growth, but also tackling the short-term needs and actions we need to take to remain competitive and also be competitive in the global environment we are operating in.
Yes, because Dow Europe is shrinking.
Now Europe is facing challenges, and some of these challenges are, of course, very familiar. We see a more difficult investment climate here. In overall, we see a more challenging market, weak market demand, specifically in this this area. Costs are, two, three times higher for energy. Mm-hmm. We're facing, sometimes unfair competition from China.
Yep.
So a lot of challenges in the current market situation, correct?
Is it a forbidden word here in this beautiful Dow office in Terneuzen to say shrink or to reduce or to shut down, or is it...
Well, it's
forbidden
something.
Lingo.
No, it's not forbidden. But I think transparently, we're taking now the actions we need to do to kind of remain competitive. And of course, we have addressed that also with some of the recent announcements.
Yes, I have them here. Would you like to recite them, or shall I?
You can start. Yeah.
So about 2 weeks ago, Dow said it would lay off 1,500 employees as part of a 1 billion cost-cutting plan. Due to, like you said, weak demand, high costs, also in Europe, I guess, because it's not specific now where the layoffs will take place. But
correct. This has been a global announcement. So we're addressing the current market challenges with the 1 billion, and then 1,500 jobs have been named in the announcement. And this is a global announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be mainly focusing and looking at the areas where the businesses have the weak market and the challenges. So this is going to be
Europe.
Europe is part of that.
Okay. And just a week earlier, you've announced, or the company announced, of course, a major maintenance on one of the naphtha crackers here in Terneuzen, major turnaround, had been postponed, saving tens of millions of euros, as it said. And shutting down the cracker, indefinitely.
We have been announcing that we will postpone the turnaround of the cracker, what is indeed a cost saving, a cost reduction actually, to anticipate on the weak market challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And also this is of course showing off to the market that is currently still very weak. So it's an immediate strategic action to address the cost savings.
Mm-hmm.
and reduce our cost spendings, and then anticipate on the current market conditions.
Yes, but I mean, postponing, it's a major operation. How long has it been? Because you did one in 2019, a turnaround of another cracker. I think it was 2 years in the planning and everything. 1,500 people were hired to do the turnaround. I guess this one was a bit the same.
These are huge turnarounds. If you're familiar with the industry, this costs, of course, a lot of preparation, a lot of people involved. So kind of making this decision is not only impacting Dow, but also the value chain partners, of course, the contractor companies that are working here. We normally get 1,000, 2,000 extra people on site.
Mm-hmm.
So it has also an impact on our partners in the industry.
I mean, it was a much needed maintenance because it has to do something with the permits. It has to be done before June. And so it won't be done. So you have to close it. I mean, it sounds very drastic.
So we will run the cracker till the legal inspection requirements. So that is how we normally run. And then if needed, we will need to idle the cracker.
But is it? But I mean, it sounds drastic and dramatic even to me. Is it?
It's a very difficult decision and that we need to take within the current market challenges we have. Yeah.
I'm just thinking how many times you're going to say challenges in this interview.
Well, as of now, not more anymore.
No, but I mean, I understand. No, but this is also a bit of the big corporation lingo. Eh? It's always challenges. No, I'm not mocking you, but I mean... this is tens of millions of euros to save on maintenance. I mean, if a company gets to that point.
Yeah, it shows how tough the situation is in the market, and especially in our region we're operating. So this is a really, really difficult decision that we needed to make.
And am I right to say that the Terneuzen site is Dow's second largest in the world?
Correct. This is the second largest manufacturing site. So in the Netherlands, you have 5 crackers. 3 of them are here located in Terneuzen. Mm-hmm. So we, just to give you a bit of history and also why the Netherlands was at that point very attractive. So 60 years ago, we celebrate 60 years Dow this year. So a really incredible milestone. And 60 years ago, this was, of course, a very attractive location. We're close to the Westerschelde, to the North Sea. We have, there was very excellent developed infrastructure for transport, a good human capital environment here, and also government at that point, I think, was very welcoming investment. So all of that made
us... Don't forget nice people in Zeeland.
Nice people, very nice, and also very talented. Yes. Excellent workforce. So all of that, of course, created a unique opportunity for the industry to build here. And if you look to kind of what's ahead of us, and with decarbonization, I still believe this is the place to be, because with all the infrastructure we have here currently, and the opportunities to build on that and extend, also for you've known probably yet on the Dutch government the plans that they have for nuclear in this area, but also potential, of course, to go for CCS. So this region, and with the North Sea ports and what we call the Smart Delta Network resources, it's an incredible infra and position. So Dow being here is very strategic. And also with, of course, we didn't discuss that at that point. And still, we have a very sophisticated market in Europe. We have around 450 million of people that still buy products, that look for circular products, for green products. Mm-hmm. Not to the, I think, expectation, as we were expecting. So we still need way more demand and way more ask for these bio green circular products. But in the end, this is a very interesting market. And I think that's also why other continents are always looking at Europe and want to supply to Europe.
Yes. People need stuff.
People need stuff.
You provide stuff to make stuff.
Yeah, we actually make very beautiful
stuff
products. No, but also key for the major transitions we need to do.
Yes, but I have some quotes here from your CEO and chairman, Mr. Jim Fitterling. Where does he originate, Mr. Fitterling?
Our headquarters in Midland.
No, I mean the name. Sorry, where does he come from? Fitterling. Is he an American?
He is an American, yes.
Okay, Fitterling. Didn't know the name. He said in May last year in an interview, he said, I have 3 quotes for you. Europe is focused more on the stick on carbon emission reductions. They are not focused at all on energy policy to drive down energy costs. Energy costs are going to continue to rise. So this was less than 1 year ago. Dow's cost position does allow it to serve the domestic market. That was what we were just talking about. But it's not in Europe to export. Europe doesn't have the cost position anymore to export. And the final one, Dow will continue to find ways to improve its cost position at its European operations, but the company's growth investment will be in low-cost regions and in high-value projects. So this sounds to me, but please correct me if I'm wrong, that of course you'll stay. You'll produce stuff, as I call it, but not to export. And Europe needs its export.
Yeah,
I think that's what we're also talking about.
To give you the perspective, the Terneuzen location, 80% of what we produce is Europe to Europe. So our market has been Europe. And I think what you see now, that Europe is less interested. That doesn't mean Europe is
interested or interesting?
Interesting for investments.
Okay, sure.
So but that's kind of the call to action that Mr. Fitterling at that point really brought out to, of course, the investor community, but also to the policymakers. If you want to get more investments in Europe, if you want to decarbonize, well, at the first, you need to be very competitive now. Mm-hmm. And you need to be competitive in a global environment you need to operate. So I think that is the urgency, you know, you kind of need to earn the right to decarbonize in this world. And that shows also off to the investment we are making in Canada, what will be our first net zero cracker. That could have been the Netherlands 2 years or 3 years ago, but it has been Canada. Why Canada? Because in Canada, you have this, first of all, I think, low energy costs. You have existing infrastructure to decarbonize. You have good government support and, of course, a market as well.
So all the things we lack.
All the things we lack.
I'm sort of laughing, but I mean, I think I should cry a bit.
Well,
maybe we both should.
Yeah, we should. We can, but you know, we don't like crying. You know, we go out there, get help, and make sure we start fixing things.
Sometimes it helps.
Sometimes it helps. Well, yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
No, but when you, I mean, I guess you go to Midland once in a while in Michigan.
Yep.
Headquarters to visit Jim Fitterling. How is Europe perceived in the headquarters? Do they shake their head? Are they sort of looking at you like, oh, she's
everybody from was looking to Europe a couple of years ago, you know, when the Green Deal came, when the developments came on circularity, on decarbonization. And let's be honest, I think a lot of what globally has happened after that on the decarbonization front is coming, of course, from everything what they saw as opportunities in Europe. Mm-hmm. I think what they're seeing now is that Europe didn't act to make kind of their Green Deal competitiveness. And in the end, it was there to increase competitiveness, to create an industry, to create, you know, a market to implement your Green Deal. And that didn't happen. So I think now they're looking at Europe, get your act together, decrease your energy costs, make sure you can compete globally, and then you can decarbonize.
And if not, bye-bye.
Well, Europe will remain very important.
Sure, for the domestic market.
The domestic market, but also I think look at all the interest Europe gets. You know, everybody wants to supply Europe. So it's still a very sophisticated, interested market. And I think we need to do better here to make sure, you know, we can produce here locally.
So how did we get in this predicament, do you think? What are the main drivers of this development?
Well, short term, and then I'm also looking a bit to the Netherlands. I think the Netherlands has been always very ambitious. What can be, you know, very strong. And I think we've done amazing things in the way the Netherlands has been operating for hundreds of years in our way of trade and how we look at, you know, trade. But mm-hmm. I think in the last years, it has been an overregulation. There has been a lot of gold plating. So the Dutch Green Deal ambitions have been way more outstanding than in other countries. What creates even in Europe another level playing field for us? Mm-hmm. And just to kind of emphasize the CO2 levy, we're facing now a very severe potential plastic tax. All of that will, you know, just really, really bring us in a more tougher position on competitiveness. Mm-hmm. While we're looking for a European single market, we're looking for a European playing field, energy cost, extremely important as well for us. So there are a lot of things that I think policymakers and governments can play a crucial role now into change.
Mm-hmm. But that's the Netherlands.
Yes.
Sort of an outlier within Europe. But
yeah.
Europe as a whole. I mean, if you talk about high cost for energy or for other feedstock, everybody points to the war in Ukraine. But is
yes.
that the only reason we have high energy prices?
No, there's also a big part, of course, is coming from the geopolitical situation. Mm-hmm. Europe was always a bit more, I think, expensive also historically, but the gap has been really, you know, getting larger and larger.
Because we're resource poor.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but in the end, of course, the there is an opportunity to kind of make this the number one priority for Europe to make sure your costs are getting way more competitive, and I think that requires an immediate call for action, an urgency, and also prioritization. Because we cannot do it all, you know. We need to decarbonize. You have a lot of other regulatory pressure. There is a huge amount of regulatory burden to the companies, and also then it's very complex. So an urgent need to simplify the Green Deal, the Green Deal legislation, and make it as it how it was created to serve competitiveness.
Yes, your CEO also spoke of a challenging regulatory environment.
Yes,
but it means there's just too many rules, too many regulations, too many things we have to do which do not contribute to the bottom line.
Yeah, and they're very complex and very uncertain. And I come back again to our kind of decarbonization project 2 years ago. We had a huge opportunity there to kind of in the CO2 space to really reduce millions of tons of CO2. And then due to, complications in NOx legislation.
Stikstof,
as the Dutch will say, that we couldn't, the government couldn't come up to a decision to support our projects, and that it's still not solved. So it's also kind of what Europe needs is acting agile, flexible, fast. You know, the reality is the world is changing very fast. So what we designed 5 years ago will not work anymore. So I think the you see that they're struggling with that agility and that flexibility.
Yes. Well, we'll come to the Clean Industrial Deal and the Affordable Energy Action Plan in a bit.
Yeah.
So just a question. Has Dow had any plant closures in Europe in the last couple of years?
Yes, we had.
Can you name them or?
Sorry?
Can you name them? Where and which ones have been closed?
We had more assets, smaller plants assets. So if needed, we can share them.
Okay, no, because sometimes when you talk to people, say, well, you know, it's just big industry and they're doing fine and they're always complaining. But what is actually happening? Are they closing down? It's not really... all that, it's not front news, newspaper front news, front page, I mean, these closures. Because I saw, LyondellBasell, of course, they announced the closure of their Maasvlakte plant just recently. ExxonMobil, Sabic last year both announced plans to close ethylene crackers. Basf is closing plants in the Ludwigshaven site. I mean... are there even more that we don't know of? Because this is sometimes you pick up small item in the paper or something.
Yeah. No, I think normally what's out there is kind of what has been announced and what is what's been shared. So I think that is public information. If you look to like the CEFIC reports, they did a report out on that, and you see that it was I think around 10,000-20,000 jobs recently that by the asset closures are impacted and.
Possibly impacted.
Possibly impacted, yeah.
No, but that's the thing, because I have to quote here. And CEFIC, by the way, is the European Chemical Industry Council in Brussels. Then they say about, it's possibly impacted. So then people say, of course. And they exaggerate a bit.
Well, no, it's no exaggeration. No, it's really closure. So they see it's an 11 million tons of production capacity what was shut. What was affecting 21 major sites in Europe. So that's significant.
Yeah. And they say that, if things don't pick up, that's my words, up to 150,000, 200,000 jobs could be at stake.
Yes. Yeah, we always say for one job in the chemical industry, you have three additional jobs. So that's the whole value chain. And it's not only, of course, our industry, but it's our customers, our suppliers. It's the whole value chain that normally gets impacted by these announcements.
But I'm curious to know, because, this is a big company and all your competitors and colleagues in the energy intensive industry, so not only chemical, are also big companies, a lot of money, a lot of public affairs people, a lot of lobbyists in The Hague, in Brussels. I was almost tempted to ask, where did they drop the ball? I mean, because from outside, people say, these are very powerful companies. And you are. They are. These are big companies. But it seems like, it's all just happening. And we're now at the point where they're closing plants. People get fired. So what happened there, actually? They stopped listening to you? Or what is it?
Yeah, well, they for sure didn't drop the ball. I'm convinced because I know many of them and I know how active they are. But if you look again back to the complexity of a Green Deal, the number of legislations, the number of effort it takes, you know, to
14 packages
to address, you know, everything there. So it's a huge amount of work, and I know all the people working in the regulatory space in the GA space have been very busy over the past years addressing everything what is needed.
Sure, they did a great job.
They did an amazing job.
Noted. But I mean, should I just conclude that politicians, well, prefer to listen more to the green side of the argument?
I think you're right there. Yeah, I think it has been, especially in some of the countries, more difficult to talk about industry and also about what we feel, you know, is so important for our society in Europe and industry, you know, the products we make, the daily use of we always say every day you touch 60 times something what has something from Dow in it and
stuff from Dow
and it's tremendously important. And also from a strategic autonomy perspective, you know, you want to keep this industry, you want to have it here.
Do we? Because that's
we
the
should.
Thing.
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah.
Of course, you're going to say
there's
going to
be no energy transition without, you know, our industry.
But didn't, because this is a political thing, isn't it? In the end, it's politicians deciding on what to do and what not to do. So do they not prioritize chemical industry and other industries, or were they unaware of the fact that the legislation they were like the Green Deal starting, what do you say? No, imposing? No?
Yeah.
Well, didn't they know or didn't they care?
I think going back to the intent of the Green Deal, it was there also to support Europe to decarbonize and to remain competitive. That was really the intent. However, then I think that's a bit of how Europe operates. We get legislation on legislation on legislation, what makes it more complex, what increases costs. And then you get, of course, some geopolitical challenges. The cycle is changing. And then, you're not able to be agile enough, flexible enough to act to that.
But how can Europe's energy-intensive industries stay competitive when Europe says, well, we're going to be basically the first continent, the first country, group of countries to get to net zero, when China says, well, 260 perhaps, India, same thing. I mean, so with this choice of going really fast and still until today, and we're going to see von der Leyen, Ursula von der Leyen next week, still saying we're not going to change our climate goals. And we want to go to 90% CO2 reduction or greenhouse gas emission reduction in 2040. So this stays in place. And with that, it's a question to you.
Yeah.
Doesn't that put us on a not competitive path? Anyway, whatever act or pact you're going to present next week.
Well, we're all very curious, of course, on what she's going to present next week. But, well, you need, and I think it was described in one of the reports, you almost need Marshall plans to rebuild the industry and Europe to achieve those goals. So there needs to be a lot of funding available and also simple access to that funding. But you need to tackle your energy infrastructure, your energy pricing.
We'll come to that. Yeah. We'll come to that. No, but one thing, and then we'll move to the Antwerp Declaration, as some listeners will know by heart. So I want to come back to the role of the industry itself. So your people didn't drop the ball. Noted again. But were energy-intensive companies like yourself, like Dow, perhaps too late in shifting gears in following what European legislators want, namely to really speed up the path to green to green products, to circular products? Were you too late, perhaps?
No, we were not too late. No, absolutely not.
that's quite a short answer, yes. But did you invest enough in green technologies?
Well, we've done, and I think as an industry, an amazing job. If I look to also my competitors or conclaves in the industry, I think what you see what has been done is already a big step forwards. We're helping the government also where we can, because what we also see, this whole transition requires a lot of new expertise, new technologies, like the situation we had with our path to zero. If you move to hydrogen and your NOx concentration increase, you know, nobody was thinking about that 5 years ago. So these are all kind of things that you find in your journey. And of course, the North Star is there, but during the journey, you need to be agile, you need to be flexible. And I think that's also what we expect from governments, and that didn't happen.
Sorry to interrupt you, but the NOx, the problem wasn't that big 5 years ago, but it was there already.
But with the new technologies, what I mean is that the industry has done such a large effort to find their, to develop their decarbonization journeys. Mm-hmm. And during these journeys, of course, you ran into these roadblocks. And what we see that it's very difficult to get then the flexibility to solve it from the government.
Yes. I would call a roadblock a challenge.
A challenge. Yeah, you were missing the challenge.
Yes. So the Antwerp Declaration, the 20th of February 2024, so 1 year ago, almost to the day, 73 business leaders, I'm just reading this out, spanning 17 sectors presented the Antwerp Declaration for a business in, a European industrial deal. Until today, 1,000 organizations spanning 25 sectors have joined in support. That's from the website. Mm-hmm. What was the main purpose of this declaration?
I think the main purpose was a clear call to action. And I think we achieved that by that, because within a year we get the clean industrial deal. So I think the sense of urgency, addressing what we need mm-hmm. to operate more competitive, that was absolutely the intent and the objective of the Antwerp Declaration.
Yes, and the declaration asked for, it's a 10-point plan, proposal. Yeah. But I mean, I think it was, to my mind, it was kind of broad. I'm not going to read them all out, but make Europe a global competitive provider of energy. Okay, yeah. How? A focus on the infrastructure Europe needs. Increase the EU's raw material security. A new spirit of lawmaking was point 9.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a bit too broad, perhaps?
Well, it addressed at that point the urgency, and I think that is the main intent, and that's also what we still are kind of, looking mm-hmm. for urgent action. We need to address short-term some of these, roadblocks.
Challenges.
So that's, I think, the main intent. You can discuss what language would be,
sure.
But I think the call out and also the action, as I said, within a year, 26th of February, we're expecting now the clean industrial deal. So for Europe, that is fast action, but we need even faster action.
Yes. Well, action, but there's a plan next
week.
There's
a plan, yeah.
So then we'll see what should at least be achieved with this deal, the clean industrial deal?
Yeah, so I think first of all, funding, as we discussed, there should be way more funding available for the industry to get support on decarbonization and also simplify access to funding.
Money.
Well, the Marshall Plans, as we discussed,
sure.
You kind of need to rebuild your industry footprint. And these are we know what it requires, but these are billions per kind of assets you need to invest to decarbonize. So you need a lot of money, easy access, but also simplified procedures.
We'll take it one point at a time, please.
Yeah.
Because I'll go to Greenpeace tomorrow and they're going to tell me, they got plenty of money. They got billions, mm-hmm. billions and billions of dollars, euros, and what have you. So, I mean, and this is, I think, one of the key points perhaps in, the image of the industry in society in Europe. I mean, why do you need money? That's a question that's maybe not directly asked to you. Well, I do it right now, but how do you answer this?
Because it requires more money to decarbonize than that the companies can afford. So
are willing to.
Yeah, and then the timeline. And because if you look to our plans, and we need to, we have committed to the 2050 goals. So that means globally, you need to make a lot of these mm-hmm. investments. And these are, as I said, billions of investments. So you cannot do it at once all. And
sure.
You need to kind of, afford, you need to kind of earn the right to decarbonize in the way that you want to do it, where you can afford it as well.
Okay, so funding is one.
Funding is one. Well, we
you
talked
can just give me your wish list. I will call Ursula tomorrow. Maybe she can
That would be an amazing.
What else do you need?
Yeah, we really need simplification of the legislation. Looking at the legislation that is really helping us to remain competitiveness, that is helping the industry to decarbonize, simplify, get out the ones that are contradictory or that doesn't help the new technologies, you know, for example. So we need a lot of that.
But when they were put in, did you raise your hand as a sector? Because
absolutely.
Also,
yeah.
Ms. von der Leyen, if you see her doing a press conference, her second word is competitiveness, and the third word is slashing red tape. Well, that's more than one word. Uh-huh. But I mean, she's, well, we're going to slash red tape. But she put it in, well, at least her previous commission put it in. Is it that simple to just take it out? As the commission now is saying, well, we're going to make everything more simple. Is it that simple?
Well, we need to see. We're waiting, of course, on what's going to be announced. But I think you're asking what we need. Well, we need simplification. Sure. And we need legislation that is, you know, helping us to become more competitive.
Okay, so funding, simplification.
Yeah, and then you need a market and a demand for low carbon, circular, bio-based products, because I think that's also something that is not, you know, developing as probably also the legislators expected a couple of years ago. So the market needs to be there. People need to want to buy circular, bio, and decarbonized products, and that's not what we're seeing at this moment.
But I think I know why, because those products will be more expensive, and we still have what's it called again? A crisis of what's it called? Well, people don't have that much money in their pockets.
Well, and the Europeans prefer, especially in uncertain times, to keep it at the bank, in savings. Yeah.
No, but I mean, stuff is going to be more expensive. So, of course, you can force a market to buy, because, I mean, Europe has the ability to say no to certain stuff. They can put in regulations, but it will mean that people have to pay more. And we have seen, and we're still seeing, some populist parties rising in Europe, mostly right wing.
Yeah.
This is not going to do well at the next elections. So it sounds very, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but is this realistic to just, it's my words, just make a market demand for your green circular product?
Well, the market will help us, you know, for the business cases, to get investments. Because if there is a clear market, if there is demand, you know, your business case gets way more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is, of course, infrastructure. And let's not forget about infrastructure that needs to be there. I was talking about why we came here 60 years ago. So if you're now going to kind of rebuild your industry in the next decades, the infrastructure should be there. So then you need to have electricity, you need to get a connection to the grid. There needs to be a lot of electricity. So, you know, the nuclear developments, but also all the other developments. Infrastructure, very important for us also. The CCS availability, that was already there in Canada. So everything that needs to be there to decarbonize, that should be available. And then also in a way that is competitive, if you compare to the decarbonization projects that are happening in other continents.
But looking at the Netherlands in this case, I think you should pack up Terneus and move to Canada. Because I mean, even the grid operators in the Netherlands say that the problems with grid congestion in the Netherlands is going to stay for at least 10 years.
Yeah. Well, depends how much they invest, of course, to solve it and how the Netherlands approaches that.
Well, we're going to invest, I think, as a society, 200 billion euros to 2040. And then grid operators say, well, we don't have the capacity to lay all the cables.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a number one priority to solve this, because it's going to be one of the most important. Because if you want to do an investment, you want to get yourself electricity, you want to be in the grid. And that's not only us, that's our customers, that's the complete value chain that's going to be completely locked by.
But how? Because everybody says, well, it's a number one priority. I agree with you 100%. But how?
Prioritize. I think that's also, for me, a
just
prioritization.
A matter of prioritizing.
Well, yeah, prioritizing. You cannot do it all. You cannot afford it all. So prioritize what will accelerate in the end.
So
the
money,
transition.
Funds, simplicity, A market and infrastructure.
And infrastructure.
That's it?
Yes. Thank you very much. You're going to fix it next week?
Sure. And the Affordable Energy Action Plan, is that something you look at as well as a company? It's also going to be launched next week?
Yeah. No, I've really focused on the industrial clean deal. Yes.
Sure, because in the competitiveness compass, the European Commission said something already about the Affordable Action Plan. Well, more renewable energy, sure, to promote electrification. Some of the cost components of energy prices can be mitigated in the short term. That's what the Commission says, as they are determined by inefficiencies in the design of network tariffs and taxation or a lack of energy market integration. Do I read this correctly, that if we integrate and get out all the inefficiencies, prices will come down?
Well, that's your analysis. So,
of course, I'm asking about yours.
Yeah.
When I read this, is from the Competitiveness Compass, launched a couple of weeks ago. So, question to you: does it sound very optimistic to you if the European Commission thinks that this, as a part of course, a bigger plan, will bring down energy prices?
Well, I think the experts have looked at that. So if that's the plan, I think we just need very competitive.
Oh, if the experts have looked at it, then it's going to be fine.
No.
But all kidding aside, even if Brussels wants to implement all these things, do you think they can? Is the European Commission and, of course, the member states, are we able to... I mean, we've called Marshall plans or Marshall... I mean, this is such a big operation... Yeah. And if you look at the competitiveness compass, I mean, the European Commission says it's going to slash red tape, but I mean, there's going to be a lot more red tape coming in if you look at all the acts and plans and deals that they're going to produce this year.
I think Europe can, if they want, if they are unified, if they're, you know, really approaching this as a single market. I think Europe can do a lot, and we've shown at certain times that we can, you know, act in that way, so we should. But the urgency and the prioritization should be there. And I think that's the clear, you know, continuous call out we're doing as much as we can.
I read in the Competitiveness Compass that they're going to launch a chemicals industry package. I forgot about package. So we have deals, plans, acts, packages. The end of this year, it's going to be launched.
Very ambitious, very good.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that's too late.
Yeah, everything is too late. But for Europe, this could be... we need things fast. But we also understand there is, of course, this is a huge exercise that needs to be done.
But if I read your CEO, and I just read out some of the quotes, and he has said this on many stages in presentations and interviews... I mean, it sounds like we are already too late. Sure, we can make some green chemicals and stuff, as I like to call it. But we're not going to do this for the export market. That ship has sailed, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's never too late to take action. Eh? So let's also talk with some positivity. And, you know, we're leaders. So leadership is taking action. Eh? Let's address that.
You mean Europe is a leader or you are a leader?
As leaders in the industry, we will take action. Eh? We do the self-help. We do what's needed to operate the companies. And then, the policymakers now need to take the action. And of course, you know, it could be too late. Late for some of the industries and divisions, but it's never too late to kind of get your act together and start moving in the right direction. And I think that's at least what we're seeing since a year.
Sure.
You know, it's a complete different tone than it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think reality has kicked in as well in Brussels, in Den Haag. But we need faster action.
Okay, we're almost at the end of this rather interesting talk. I'd like to read out a quote by Victoria Meyer. I didn't know her, but she's a chemical industry consultant and the host of the Chemical Show podcast. So she predicts that the industry will look very different across the world in 5 to 10 years' time. And she says, in Europe, companies may be smaller and more numerous, with new names appearing. I suspect a certain amount of change of ownership and rebirth. Green and bio-based products will continue to grow and develop, but will take decades to get to scale. The industry will shed the heavy weight so it can start fresh again. To what extent do you agree or disagree with Ms. Meyer?
Well, she brings in some interesting aspects, and I think there is, Europe is not a continent that is growing in the way that other continents are doing. We have, of course, an aging population. They have different needs, they need different stuff. So I think you also need to be realistic about how the continent is developing and what it needs. So if the industry will be adapting to that, I think that is normal. I think very positive is that she does see, and actually that's also what we're seeing, is of course still growth markets within bio, within circular, within decarbonized products. So it's going to be there. Is it going to be in the fast accelerated timeline that the Green Deal had anticipated? I think that's something we can see you're laughing, argue about, but I think that's going to be challenging. So the time, but I think the steps will be made to get there. Yeah.
Your CFO said something at an annual leadership conference, at least it's a quote. Yeah. You said, it's hard. If it's hard, give us a day. If it's impossible, give us a week. And it's a quote by the it's a rapper, Jay-Z.
Super cool.
And you said, super cool. You said that this also applies
Our CFO is also super cool. So
they're both super cool.
They're super cool.
Hard, give us a day, impossible, a week. Yeah. How much time do you think we need to turn things around in Europe? Couple of weeks?
Well, next week it's going to start. Now, I think it shows kind of that's the DAO spirit. That's Team DAO. This is, you know, how we are.
Team DAO.
We solve problems. So we're going to solve this. And it's not going to be easy. And, I think also the messages we have been giving, these are really, really difficult messages because in the end it impacts people, it impacts shops. So, we are 127 years. We have survived many cycles. We have survived many administrations. We are operating globally, so we're gonna do this one as well.
But it means if you say we're going to solve this, it depends on what you're going to solve. I mean, I'm sure you'll be here in 50 years' time in Europe, but it can be perhaps much smaller, green, circular, and the money is being made in other continents.
There's
sort of an implicit, also in Brussels, there's sort of an implicit promise that we're going to have a clean industrial deal, we're going to have clean industry, perhaps, but perhaps much smaller. And that's not something that, in Brussels at least, and companies also, they're very reluctant to talk about this. The implicit promise is it's going to stay as it is, but just greener. No, it's prepped green and smaller.
And if you go through all transitions, you know, in the past, historically, the footprints and everything is going to change. I think what's most important, if you have this kind of tremendous ambition, and what I think everybody supports, and also all the companies have made all these commitments, then you also need to make sure that, you know, especially if we're going to do it here, don't import grey, you know, don't import unfair. Make sure, you know, the trade is being done in a way that you avoid carbon leakage and that you then also help the planet as you were anticipating. Because if we're going to deindustrialize Europe and the rest of the world is going to, you know, remain coal-based, etc., what did we achieve then?
Sure. Yes.
Well, the industry here now is one of the safest, cleanest you have. So I think keeping it here and making it even better is something worth.
Final question. Final. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, Wednesday, the 19th, the Industry Summit in The Hague.
Yes.
A PwC report about the contribution to industry on society, I think, is going to be launched. Will you be there?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we've been asking for this one specifically in my position, because what you see normally in countries like Germany and France, there is, a very good industry policy, industry support. So we've been asking to get industry and government together to discuss what is needed.
Okay, well, I'll be there as well.
Thank you.
So if you get any feedback on the podcast at the summit, and it's negative, just point to me and say, it's his fault.
It's his fault. good that you're there, because we need you there. Thank you.
Tabitha Verburg, president of Dow Chemical in Western Europe. Thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you, Remco.
And of course, I would like to thank you, dear listeners, and especially all our friends of the show for tuning in once again. My name is Remco de Boer. I hope you'll join me again next week in search of Europe's energy future.